with the ideology only.
Yeah, the left goes right, the right,
like,
goes left.
This is what they believe, it's actually the technology that is.
Yeah, the look at that bird.
The people.
They got, you know, the tribal people respond to radio. So more than the French and British, they're going to be in, get the tribal put on, retrieve that. But at the same time, they want to be individualistic with the car. And they're the most subject to that stress because they're turned on most tribally by the radio. And therefore, they are the most frustrated. That's why they attack everybody. It's like McLuhan saying Watergate was the battle between the newspaper and television for the advertising dollar. Well, World War II was caused by Germany's own battle within itself between the car and the radio. Try to tell that to a historian. We got to post that. We should make that a quick stamp, post it on the McLuhan thing, see if any of the McLuhanites get it. World War II was the result of the Lebensraum, the claustrophobic paranoia that Germany got itself into by going in two directions at the same time. Are you still with us, Bert? I don't hear Bert laughing.
I think
he got knocked off. We'll go over and check. Geez, my whole internet is all fucked up over there on the web template. Let's see. Yes, that's you, Bert, right? I just unmuted you. Bert, that's not you, Bert. What happened to Bert?
Posting B. Posting B. Report.
Yes. There's some other person. Do you want to speak, whoever the other person is? Okay. Now, we're moving along here. We've only got half an hour, and I still got a few pages. Maybe we won't finish this, but we'll try. A lot of good ideas. So we did, what did we just do? The car. Okay, so the question was, what will the car do to Russian society? The next question is, could the direction of influence be reversed? Instead of the age of information invading Russia, could not the security and immobility of Soviet society become attractive to us and influence us? Yeah, could not the security and immobility of Soviet society become attractive to us and influence us? The tribalism of Soviet society would influence us, would become attractive, and that's why everybody, all the intellectuals in the 30s, got involved with being communists, liking reading Marx and celebrating the Soviet Union. They saw that as a tribal society, and they didn't know that radio was making them favor a tribal image. So what is McLuhan going to say about that? Could the direction of influence be reversed? Instead of the age of information invading Russia, could not the security and immobility of Soviet society become attractive to us and influence us? See, he's talking about figure there. The information media invades Russia. Everybody's invaded. But then society start looking around for a national image of a rearview mirror that fits their new put-on. Now, this is Bert, right, Bert? Bert has entered the... So you missed some incredible stuff. But we're not going to go over it. You will hear it on when you re-listen, right?
Yes.
You missed about 5 minutes, right?
Yes, 5 minutes, yes.
Okay, so the answer to that, McLuhan says, one of the unexpected events of electric retrieval in the West, electric retrieval, is electric technology being retrieved? Is he aware of parallel worlds? Does he know that that Egypt's have... electricity, or he may mean retrieval as an effective electric environment, but that's an interesting phrase. One of the unexpected events of electric retrieval in the West has been the restoration of the Middle Ages of the hippie community. Hippies are nomadic, role-playing troubadours. That is why Russia has lost its interest for the West. Russia is a hippie world of medieval costume effects and camaraderie. It is no longer bizarre or exotic. So the obsession with Russia in the 30s and 40s and people becoming communists intellectually, by the 60s and 70s, Russia is a boring, dull place because we're surrounded by simulated Russians known as hippies. That's why Russia has lost its interest for the West. Russia is a hippie world of medieval costume effects and camaraderie. It is no longer bizarre or exotic. So that's a pretty good answer, eh?
Yes. Complete original. hippies are Russians.
Now, I don't remember reading this. This side, he says, the car intensifies individualist awareness by creating a carapace capsule for each driver. We read that. The car intensifies competitive private identity. It turns the countryside into a suburb. Oh, yeah, I remember reading that. Okay, so we move on to the next question. Does this mean...
There is a phenomenon that, for example, the hippies want to become communal and share everything, and but they live in a capitalist country and they want to consume media,
yeah,
information and entertainment. So there is this fighting in all people with what we call ideology and
perceptual
lifestyle and the consumption.
Yeah, the ideology is stuff for the chemical body, the chemical brain. Hey, Bert, did you get knocked off and have to be brought?
And there is all this wave of people,
yes, I did, Bob,
like dropping out.
Yes, dropping out. And there are others. Women are dropping in. Women's Lib in 1970. They're men are dropping out and women are dropping in. They see new roles for themselves in the job market. They're like group oriented, family oriented, and they're becoming individualist. And the male drops being individualist and becomes group oriented. So you have Abbie Hoffman versus Gloria Steinem. Abbie Hoffman leading.
Today that it's all about this dropping in and dropping out.
Yes.
That this confusion of wanted to be something but actually doing something else.
Okay, now look at this. The Android meme simulates that. So you have endless dropping in and dropping out. What's the dropping in? Endless fucking emails being sent to you. All right, that's the Android meme dropping into you. The dropping out is the outage shortage. Is your fucking thing? Like Bert keeps dropping out. He keeps getting knocked off the internet. Dropping out and dropping in via the Android meme. Another great article that someone could make a movie out of, or a TV series, or a special.
Or at least a post.
No, you're blurred.
Your favorite social network.
Don't waste your breath. Do it again with the you blurred rocks. I can't make out what you're saying.
Yes, at least people don't write books anymore.
That's right.
They just post it.
They just announce they're going to write books, and then they find an agent, and then they go on TV, get interviewed about the book they're going to write. Fran Lebowitz did that. You guys know Fran Lebowitz? Famous.
I've heard the name.
Yeah, she hung out with Warhol and got a book contract because she wrote a column for Warhol's early newspaper Interview. And she actually wrote about Wyndham Lewis. She liked Wyndham Lewis. And I met her 40 years later and talked about Lewis with her. But anyways, Fran Lebowitz became the first baby boomer to become like the Dorothy Parker replay of the Round Table of New York. So she was a sophisticated columnist. And then she got writer's block, she claimed, and then hung out with Warhol and did the Studio 54 and did other stuff. She eventually became an editor at Vanity Fair, but she never got a book. She never couldn't do any more books. But she was interviewed, constantly interviewed in all the talk shows for the next 40 years, and she just talked about her writer's block. She, well, I could go into different reasons why she had it, but she thought she was supposed to write books and never could make one. Mm-hmm. And so that's my model. She was the model for get an agent and then get on the talk shows, and then you might be invited to speak. She does a lot of speaking at universities on the lecture circuit. So the book is a means to another end. Just supplementing what your point was there, Rox, okay? You got that?
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you're welcome.
Thank you for all these
footnotes. I footnoted your comment. So
yes, because sometimes I have like an idea, but it's hard to express.
Yes, you haven't done your literate homework
enough. Like you have the most knowledge.
I got the left hemisphere file. You were too busy making clothes and designing in the art community, and you
missed making noise, programming.
Yeah, making art for local communes, East Berlin communes, and West Berlin expatriate communes. That's your life. You're in the art world. Trying to do electronic composition for 10 people, and you should have been reading books. You now would have a lot of footnote. Okay, so So this question is, in Understanding Media, you wrote, quote, and this is from page 58 of Understanding Media, Signet version, S-I-G-N-E-T. That'd be the paperback, I think. Everybody notices how coal and steel and cars affect the arrangements of daily life. So that society, so this is a quote, this is McLuhan writing this. Everybody notices how coal and steel and cars affect the arrangements of daily life, so that society begins to look like a linguistic echo or repeat of language norms, a fact which has disturbed the Russian Communist Party very deeply. Wedded as they are to 19th century industrial technology as the basis of class liberation, that would be chemical body liberation, nothing could be more subversive of the Marxian dialectic than the idea that linguistic media shapes social development as much as do the means of production. So there, Marx in the 19th century came up with the means of production shaping society. Now you've got software or linguistic media shaping social development. So the Russian professor says, is this meant as a refutation of the Marxian base superstructure argument? Base hyphen superstructure. Is this meant as a refutation of the Marxian base superstructure argument? And I have to turn the page upside down. McLuhan says, Marx paid no attention to the environmental effects created by new products. He studied only work market products. See that? He didn't study the new products.
Yes.
Because the thing with most people on their chart, you are doing all these angles, all
yes.
this completion and all this complementation. Of
I'm studying the new products. The fact that the typewriter as product completely revolutionized all administration and social life and the place of women in society was not Marx's bag. That was an old phrase they had back, you know, what's your bag? Was not his bag. Now here's McLuhan putting on the bookish scholar. He's using slang in this intellectual dialogue. Was not his bag. In this respect, Marx is exactly like Adam Smith, Ricardo, John Stuart Mill, was it? John Mill. And the rest. None of the classical economists, including Marx, has ever studied the effects of new products in creating environments. That's McLuhan's. That's McLuhan as economist. He's saying you guys are out of date in your economics models. And then he's going to write a book, Take Today, to describe the new economics. So I'll do that again. Marx paid no attention to the environmental effects created by new products. He studied only work market products. The fact that the typewriter as product completely revolutionized all administration and social life and the place of women in society was not his bag. In this respect, Marx is exactly like Adam Smith, Ricardo Mill, and the rest. None of the classical economists, including Marx, has ever studied the effects of new products in creating environments. So then there's a second question. McLuhan says, the guy says, does this mean that the economic base of society can be taken for granted? The economic base. And McLuhan says, yes, it is ordinary ground. So economics is money, trade, barter, is a ground. I used to think about that a lot. How is it a ground? Yes, it is ordinary ground. So if you're to change capitalism, it's pretty hard to change through bureaucracy. It's too much of a ground. But you can bring in new products, which make new grounds that would change economics and the class war.
Well, usually to change the financial system, there has to be a revolution, like for the establishment of the paper notes in France. There has to be the French Revolution.
Right.
Napoleon.
Well, okay, what's interesting there,
environment.
You know, that's the only... The revolution done there can only be done with the print medium. It's the only one that has messages, has content, and can upset the class structure. You cannot use print messages to cause any revolutions after that. Only the technologies cause the revolutions. So that's an interesting point.
Gazettes and newspapers.
Yeah. So the printing press is the only one that evokes chemical body... political bureaucracy revolution, overtaking the bureaucracy. Because once you get into the electric age, bureaucracy doesn't work anymore. So overtaking the state, like the SES and the radicals of the left in since the 60s, are trying to take over the old bureaucracies, and that's irrelevant. That's not where power is.
Listen, and there is this speed of daily is like Maxim will say, daily there's a notice printed. So it's
no, do that again. You're a bit blurry. What is daily?
An odyssey, like in Ulysses.
Yes. One day is a whole odyssey?
So much information, yeah.
In
one day. And there's always this acceleration in trading. So there has to be this revolution to adapt to this new situation of more information and more trade.
Well, there'll always be wars. There'll always be fads. Fads in art, fashion, music, entertainment that reflect a new sensibility. I mean, look at the history of dancing. You bring in movies and cars and telephones, and so you have the, was it called the cakewalk? You know, the early, before jazz, just at the honky-tonk phase, they had the dance called the cakewalk. And then they did the, what were they called? The clapper dances? I forget what it was called in the teens and 20s. Flappers.
Charleston,
yes. So then you have the Charleston representing more the teens and 20s. And then the radio environment gets locked in, and the mixture of radio, cars, and movies and magazines leads to the end of the waltz and the beginning of whatever you call jazz dancing, swing dancing. What was that called? The hop? Anyways, you got a different dance style in the late 20s, early 30s. So each decade, like, the zeros and tens are the flappers and cakewalk and whatever that... What is that one? Well, we just said it. Anyways, whatever that dance is called. And then you've
Charleston.
Got the... The what?
The Charleston.
The Charleston. But there was another name, another kind of dance too, I think. So you got the flappers and the Charleston in the first part of the 20th century. Then when you get maybe closer to the 20s and 30s, into the 30s and 40s, you get a different medium mix. So then you have the swing dancing. What are they called? And ballroom dancing? And at the Rosebud Ballroom, Roseland Ballroom. And then you have the jive in the late 40s, beginning of rock and roll. And then you have a whole bunch of dances in the global satellite 60s. You got the Watusi, the Lullabaloo, the this, the that. Remember? Endless named dances. So it really diversifies. And then you have non-dancing in the psychedelics, where everybody just took drugs and just sat there stoned. Dancing faded out for a while. And then disco retrieved it. And then you had punk dancing, the mosh pit. Each, you can go through the whole history of dances, and they reflect the changes in technology. They are symptoms. They are fashionable. It's the modern art form. It's the reflection of changes in art, being the group, movement, or dance.
That's a first, Bob. The history of dancing. What you're doing, the history of dancing.
Yeah, figuring ground in the history of dance. So... what kind of dancing did you do, Rox, in your late teens? Well, you were actually up on stage playing, but if you were dancing, what kind did you do? Did you have a name for it?
No, I'm not sure.
You can't remember.
Well, I used to like Kraftwerk.
Kraftwerk? Techno. You'd dance to them?
Yes,
techno?
That's what
What'd you do, wiggle around?
Like,
how would
like
you...
the robot.
Robot stuff.
No,
okay.
We don't really dance. Like, you know.
That's right. You would do robot movements. You would do postures. You would make postures. It was called voguing in New York City. Michael, you just sort of... Maybe that's when hip-hop starts happening, right? People start breakdancing. Did you do breakdancing?
No.
I always thought that musicians were the guys who couldn't dance. So I was a good dancer, so I'd be enjoying the dance floor and watching stupid people learning how to play the guitar and play the drums, and they were forced to sit off stage and not enjoy dancing. So since you were such a musician, you probably can't dance, right, Rox? You're not a very good dancer, are you?
You've seen me dance. in what? Temple Hof.
In the park?
We were dancing.
We were dancing
in Temple Hof.
All right, with the kids.
You were break dancing.
I was break dancing. You were just filming or taking pictures. You took the detached view. I don't remember you dancing around much.
No, I just jumped around.
You jumped a little bit. Very feeble jump. Very poor jumping, Bert. Lousy jumping.
So you did.
I was there
when you were
fucking breakdancing with the 10-year-olds. I was whipping my leg around.
Yes. They were looking at him like.
Yeah, like this is not right. There's something obscene about
like,
this.
What is this?
How can this 9-year-old guy be doing teenage postures? They were flummoxed by that. They were couldn't absorb it. Okay, so
it was very funny that everybody was dancing, like the whole park was in a frenetic mood. Everybody got into this
party. It started to spread. Yeah, because this guy had brought this little broadcast thing, his little radio. It's his birthday, so he brought his own music to have his own birthday party, and then we provided one for him. Okay, so look at this. So we got two more questions, then we're finished, and we'll be finished just in time. So it says, will the global village, so if he brings up the global village, let's see if McLuhan brings in global theater. Will the global village, if universally achieved, resemble communism? And that's capital C. Can you answer that? How would McLuhan answer that? Will the global village, if universally achieved, resemble communism? You have nothing? Okay, remember he writes...
Repeat it again.
Yeah, will the... This guy, it's 1970, he's not up in McLuhan, he doesn't know McLuhan's talking about a global theater, has dropped the global village aspect. So he's still a bit behind. So he says, will the global village, if universally achieved, resemble communism, capital C communism?
No. It'll flip into individualism or...
Yes.
Maybe will he say it will flip into individualism?
Quadrophenia, where you're tribal on Monday, individualistic on Tuesday, a rapist on Wednesday, a banker on Thursday,
and
making selfies
changes.
On Friday. full-blown quadrophenia. So, first of all, McLuhan would say, well, it's not a global village anymore. He says, if universally achieved, the professor is thinking in terms of a global world government bureaucracy, almost. And that happened in the 30s. And it would definitely not resemble the bureaucrats of Soviet world. Actually, McLuhan called that the second world. The first world was advanced capitalism. The second world was Russian bureaucracy. The third world was the undeveloped world. And the fourth world was the aboriginal, ayahuasca-taking people, the obscure tribal groups in the jungles. And that's what we were flipping into, the fourth world, technologically. So the global village has already been universally achieved. So this guy really has no clue about understanding McLuhan. His question is really rearview mirror. And McLuhan had already been saying that we were in a software communist world. Hardware communism is what Russia was trying to do, and that happened in England in the 19th century and in America. So that McLuhan would say by 1950 that America is the most communist country in the world in terms of uniformity and consumption of products.
Right.
So there's all those kind of things you can say. So I now turn the page because the answer is upside down. Let's see what he says. Communism was achieved in England before the birth of Marx. Now imagine this guy, probably Marx. What? Did it happen before Marx was even born? Yes. He says, without the benefit of ideology. Communism was achieved in England before the birth of Marx without the benefit of ideology. When public service environments available to ordinary men exceed the means of private wealth to produce for itself, communism, practically speaking, exists. Remember, radio money becomes public property by 1929 and into the 30s. That's the hardware communism of banking inside the software communism of radio. So he's saying when public service environments available to ordinary men exceed the means of private wealth to produce for itself, a Rockefeller can't make a fucking radio network for itself, or highways, all these things that these massive environments already were huge in the 19th century compared to previous societies. And so communism, practically speaking, existed by 1830, McLuhan has said elsewhere.
Yes, would you say that then the credit for all is also like a type of communism, and we tend to think that's capitalism, but it's actually everybody consuming.
Right. Now, you're a little blurred. What was the first part of your sentence?
Credit for all.
Oh, credit. Credit is the software solution to the public property, money, visual cash becomes
public. So software capitalist communism?
Yes. Credit is software communism. Hardware. Money is software in the 19th century, the flow of cash. But it becomes when it becomes obsolete by radio. So money was like the most soft part of hardware communism in the 19th century. Then when it was superseded by the software of radio, the hardware software of money collapsed. And then it was given to everybody as a guaranteed environment in the 30s, the beginning of the welfare state. Then you move into a more complex global theater with many environments and free information. Money cash can't keep up with it, so then you have credit. Everybody has access to credit. And that was a revolution. They used to only give credit to the owners and capitalists, producers, the factory creators. But after the GI Bill in the 40s and 50s, after World War II, they said everybody can borrow money. It democratized debt. Then the digital part of the Android meme collapsed credit in the 70s. So yes, credit in the 60s is software communism. All right, so all these terms McLuhan's already said, but this Gary Kern doesn't know that. He doesn't know this stuff. So he says communism, hardware communism, already exists by 1830 in England. Today in the West, multi-billion dollar service environments are free for all. That's before pay TV. That's radio and TV. Relatively, he used to say, you had access to all this information and entertainment for a few pennies when you had radio and TV in the 50s and 60s. He says, the steak line and the soup line have merged. The soup line is when you're on welfare, right, and you got no money.
Yes.
And the steak line is for rich people. So wealth and being poor have come together with the beginning of the TV landscape, which is going to become the TV body, and you have the old chemical body. The mixing of bodies is starting to happen in the 60s and 70s because the new wealth is what you can see on TV. The Queen sits there in the Buckingham Palace and watches TV like everybody else, whereas Mrs. Rothschild in 1905 in near Nice, I don't know what that place was called, right beside Nice, I went over there to the Rothschild. And so she had this crummy little home, but it was a palace in those days, not air-conditioned, and she would have parties and marry dogs to have reason to have social gatherings of 150 people, real dinky little world, That's before software communism. She had a bit of hardware communism going on, but not really. She tried to have a private party elite social scene. So the steak line and the soup line have merged. The effects of wealth are to create total lack of leisure and privilege. Now look at that. Wealth creates total lack of leisure. Everybody thinks you're going to get wealthy and then have leisure. But it turns everybody into a harassed data processor, which leads to incredible stress in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, and chronic fatigue and all that other stuff. What's it, chronic fatigue and yeast? What's the yeast thing called? Yeast overgrowth and chronic fatigue. All because there's no leisure with the increased wealth. Now, that's a pretty original statement. The effects of wealth are to create total lack of leisure and lack of privilege. The rich man is a harassed bureaucrat, frustrated by his fellow bureaucrats. And that's, you got the Rockefellers and Rothschilds conspiring, killing people off, killing off Kennedy and all this stuff, so they can get to run the bureaucracy. And the whole bureaucracy is obsolete, but they don't see that. They become harassed bureaucrats. I mean, here's this guy, Rockefeller. Why does he need to even do anything? But he has to become a politician, he has to become vice president and harass bureaucrats just to fight off all the other harassed bureaucrats from all the other empires. Because he thinks he has to maintain in charge. And so when I talked to him through the Evergreens in 1995, I said, you tried to control the effects of science. You tried to, keep society limited. And he says, yes, we tried, but it was hopeless. And then he says, basically, the genie was out of the bottle by the 1400s, the beginning of the Renaissance. That was the beginning of mass media, the printing press. So private wealth was started to be diminished. So what do you think of that answer, Roxy? Isn't that a great answer? Oh, did she hang up? It's 7:30. She might have to go. So where are we at? Are you there, Bert?
Yes, I'm here.
Let's see. Do we need to dropped off at 7:30? Yeah, she says dropped off, but it's time to go. Thanks. So she's not going to get the last word, Bert. You are. So take okay. advantage of it. So we did this. Let me just say this. All right, so you get that answer, Bert? The importance of this? Communism was achieved, hardware communism, I would add the word hardware, he says it elsewhere. Hardware communism was achieved in England before the birth of Marx without the benefit of ideology. You know, Marxism rose, got popular around the world due to the telegraph, because the telegraph brought in electric simultaneity and started to create the retribalization. So the emotion of multitude that the telegraph brought in made the working man feel that he was united with working men all over the world. That's what made Marx popular. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes.
His concepts of shared environments unwittingly matched with the emotion of multitude caused by the working man inside the telegraph environment. So that leads to all kinds of confusion, because when World War One broke out, the big crisis for the Communist International was, why are we going to, we're working men united around the world, now we're going to go back to our different nations and fight our fellow working man in another nation. That was the big crisis in communism in 1914. And, you know, many left people felt betrayed by the bureaucrats of communism, got paranoid about Germany and went back to their countries and divided and failed the working man movement. And that was probably caused by the hot media of the car and the movie. They were starting to, you could say that the communism movement broke up in World War One because the hot media was increasing, retrieving individual competition and nationalism. Hadn't thought of that before.
Yeah, I remember when you were playing those McLuhan tapes. I remember hearing McLuhan say something in reference that Karl Marx was in the rearview mirror and communism actually existed 100 years before he actually, something in that reference, that communism yeah. existed 100 years before Marx or something like that.
Well, and he's saying that.
Yeah.
Marx was born, I think, in 1819, 1820 or something, maybe yeah. 1810s. He's only 20 years old or 30, a teenager, when Marshall sees communism happening by 1830. And they don't publish Das Kapital until the 40s, I think. So yeah. Marx is describing the rearview mirror. The telegraph is coming in. Let me just put that in, get the dates. Karl Marx, born in 1818. So he's only 20 in 1838, and that's when the telegraph started to be built in the United States, 1840s, late 30s, early 40s, by Samuel Morse. But McLuhan would say the effect of the technology is already happening on people before the technology shows up. The effects precede the causes. So when did he write Das Kapital? The Communist Manifesto trying to find where. The most well-known being the 1848 pamphlet, the Communist Manifesto. And that was the year of many national revolutions, 1848. So he is his manifesto comes out when the telegraph is just starting, and it, and through the next 30 years, rises with the collective effect of the telegraph. Becomes a big deal. So he had the right concepts for... It's almost like he turned hardware into a symbolic system. The means of production shape society. That's like an art form perspective. The means of production are the real art. And so the working man now sees the rearview mirror hardware environment and doesn't notice the emotional multitude he's being seduced by in the telegraph and electric media. So he's rearview mirroring it. And the artist comes up with the right rearview mirror, conceptually, to resonate with what the working man sees in the rearview mirror. That's what Marx did. Now, it's nothing to do with what the Russians did with Marx or what countries try to bureaucratize the hardware production system and then call it Marxism or communism. Communism, when public service environments available... Okay, communism was achieved in England before the birth of Marx without the benefit of ideology. When public service environments available to ordinary men exceed the means of private wealth to produce for itself, communism, practically speaking, exists. Today in the West, multi-billion dollar service environments are free for all. The steak line and the soup line have merged. The effects of wealth are to create a total lack of leisure and privilege. The rich man is a harassed bureaucrat, frustrated by his fellow bureaucrats. You see, there's McLuhan as the Christian monk, or the Christian saint. He's come up with a new way to criticize the wealthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yes, yes.
He's saying it's actually a drag being wealthy. You become a harassed bureaucrat. So it's an interesting way to retrieve spiritual values, so-called spiritual values.
Isn't that sort of like the underlying tone or like a tone that he has in the Mechanical Bride also? Doesn't he reference that?
Yes. In the Mechanical Bride, he talks about Karl Marx as the one who discovered the medium as the message.
Yeah.
He hasn't got the phrase yet, but he says that Marx saw the massage of industry in changing society. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah, you read The Mechanical Bride, so you know he says something like that in there.
Yes, and it's sort of a pun also on the wealthy. I remember reading just several, like, underlying tones.
The harassed bureaucrat. Yeah, the wealthy are, he makes a joking put-down pun. Now, people by the 80s and 90s are saying, the baby boomers were saying, well, we had all this, we were supposed to have leisure. It was supposed to be more and more leisure society, but we just get more and more stress. They didn't know that McLuhan had already nailed that in the 60s and predicted that the baby boomers by the 80s would be totally stressed out because they had to process information. The new work became the TV body lifestyle and later the computer chip body lifestyle. And I'm one of the less harassed people in the world because I don't have a cell phone. That really, you know, I become old-fashioned in processing ancient information, but gives you a lot of slack. Right? I'm not processing today's information.
Yes.
Do you have any kids, Bert?
Yes, I do.
How
yes,
old?
I do. The oldest is 30... will be 32. And
well,
the youngest is 23. So I got like a 10-year range.
They're 23 is millennial.
Yeah.
And so they're processing information a lot. They've
more than they know. More than they know.
Right. Well, they're like fish in the water. It's not. They're not processing information. They're breathing it.
Yeah.
It's like they're more involved in it. And therefore don't notice it as much. Okay, so then the last question is, does the extension of the central nervous system by the mass media in electronic society, the decentralization of life and the formation of a global village, entail an indifference to ideology? That's what Rox has been saying all along. And then the guy says, I have in mind your quotation of John Cage. Quote, the highest purpose is to have no purpose at all. This puts one in accord with nature, in her manner of operation, unquote. That's from The Medium is the Massage. The quote is, the highest purpose is to have no purpose at all. This puts one in accord with nature, in her manner of operation, unquote. McLuhan answers by saying, yes, the extension of the central nervous system shifts man's attention entirely from categories and concepts to experience and percepts. So it's not that you have no purpose, is that you engage less in hardware goal-oriented activities, but you're working your damnedest off to be in a state of being and experiencing percepts. So there's a lot more embedded in that answer than he spells out. Yes, the extension of the central nervous system. So he's saying, will we have an indifference to concepts, ideology, and will we have no purpose? He says, yes, the extension of central nervous system shifts man's attention entirely from categories and concepts to experience and percepts. That means there will be an obsession to have more and more chemical body experiences. That's tourism. And the escort service. More and more experience. Percepts. Everybody becomes a prober. Fanatically driven. To have more and more experience. And McLuhan's writing that sensory experience is not input at all. That's not experience. That's just one-fifth of yourself, rear-view mirroring it, trying to make your body have all kinds of intense experiences. From food to headphone listening. So there's a whole bunch of stuff opened up by that last answer that this guy probably never had a clue about. Did he keep reading McLuhan? Did he keep up with it? So that's that.